Thank you. I'm a little bit shorter than some people here, so I might need to move this down. So actually, I have to go home now to my kitchen and throw away some utensils. Didn't realize they were so bad. So my name is Lindsay Haynes Maslow, and I am a food systems and health analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists. I'm also an adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Nutrition at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And for those of you who saw the video, Ricardo Salvador is the director of the Food and Environment Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. We are a science-based advocacy organization that we are really trying to ensure that policies and programs are informed by real science and good science, not just any science. So today I'm going to be talking to you about, I don't have anything to disclose except that I have to go home to my kitchen and throw things away. I'm going to be talking about the healthcare costs associated with diet-related chronic disease in the United States. I'm first going to give off just a little background of why we choose what we eat and how do we make those choices, and then review the current U.S. farm and agricultural policy in this country, and also looking at the current healthcare costs associated with poor diets and these diet-related chronic disease. And then I have two mini case studies that will look at what would be the potential cost savings if we actually increased our fruit and vegetable intake. So this is among adults and in children. So I don't know if anybody is familiar with the socio-ecological framework of health, but it's this idea that there are a lot of multidisciplinary factors that impact our choices. There's a lot of feedback loops as well. So we see that at the very bottom you have your individual level characteristics. So this is your genetics, your personal health beliefs, and your interpersonal characteristics. So this is my family, my friends, my social networks, and my support. And you have the community level characteristics, so the food environment, the store environment, where you live, work, and play. At the very high level, you have policy level characteristics, and these are laws, they are state laws, they are federal policies that really govern sometimes how you actually have a behavior impacted. Now, what happens is that all of these factors come together to affect your access to certain foods, or I also like to say lack of access to certain foods. And then, obviously, access will be automatically attributed to your intake. Now, we did hear a little bit about our current U.S. farm policy. So after World War II, we had a lot of individuals that were food insecure. We created lots of programs that it would help boost sales of certain foods. We had this idea that, you know, people were very, very skinny. They weren't getting enough food in their body. They didn't have enough nutrients. So we really needed to pump in cheap food into our system. So what happened to this is we had a lot of commodity crops, which are corn and soybeans. These are heavily subsidized in our system by tax dollars. Now, farmers get a percentage of money based on what they grow, and some crops are a little bit more lucrative to grow than others. So this is what you see in fruits and vegetables. They are not as lucrative, not as financially rewarding as soybeans and corn. Now, the one interesting thing here is that the USDA recommends, has anybody seen a MyPlate? Okay, good. So they recommend a high level of fruit and vegetable intake. This used to be in the pyramid. It was 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Trying to make it a little bit more simple, they just said fill half your plate with fruits and vegetables at every meal. Now, the interesting thing is, though, all everything that the USDA is subsidizing, it doesn't actually go to fruits and vegetables. So what we have here is that ingredients, corn and soybeans, these are the main ingredients in highly processed foods. Now, these highly processed foods are usually higher in salt, sugar, and fat. Now, this also, you have an interesting concept of price. Now, we have certain foods that are very cheap, with cheap ingredients, we use those as the main ingredients in junk food. So we do know that junk food has high fat, high sugar, and high sodium. Now, when you're looking at what you're eating today, you see that there are diet risk factors and chronic disease. And unfortunately, subsidizing certain cheaper ingredients will actually link to increased rates of obesity, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and stroke. I think we all know how widespread these issues are, but I always like to remind people, Raise your hand if you know someone with type 2 diabetes, and keep your hands up. Raise your hand if you have a family member or friend who's had a heart attack or stroke. High blood pressure. I think almost everybody's hand might be up. If not, you are an amazing person, and maybe you live, I think I saw someone here from Denver, Colorado, so maybe you live in Colorado. But these are issues that it affects everybody in our country, and we're having huge healthcare costs related to this. I'm sure you've seen just a lot of literature lately, but I did want to focus on one study that we did using the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, MEPS. This is a nationwide survey that is conducted in the U.S. It's housed under the Department of Health and Human Services, and it surveys about 26,000 patients nationwide every year. They survey patients that you have to go to a doctor's office, so this is a little bit of caveat. It's an individual that has shown up to a doctor, a clinic, or a hospital in a given year, and they're asked a bunch of questions. And they also look at their total healthcare costs, so how much did your insurance pay for something? And we looked at, one, what would happen, what would be the healthcare cost of an adult who was cautioned by their doctor for having a poor diet? So what were their healthcare costs compared to someone who wasn't cautioned by their physician? And then we also looked at we compared the healthcare costs for individuals with some of these leading diet-related chronic diseases. So how expensive was a person who did not have a chronic disease compared to someone that did? And we wanted to really pull in the public aspect of this. So I only looked at individuals that received publicly funded health insurance. So this is Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, and the VA insurance. Now, what you see here on... I'm bad with left and right. The shorter bar down there, these are individuals that were not cautioned about an unhealthy diet. Their average BMI is a little bit below 27, and then you see that those individuals that had an unhealthy diet were cautioned about their unhealthy diet, actually had BMIs up to 31. So this is an obese category. Both sets are considered generally overweight based on their BMI, but obviously the individuals that had an unhealthier diet were significantly had a higher BMI than individuals that not. Now, we also saw that individuals in the group that were cautioned about their diet had average healthcare costs of about $6,800 per year versus an individual that was not cautioned, and that was only about $3,000. And all of these graphs are statistically significant at the 0.01 value. So this is thinking, okay, now what happens with not even just diet, and we know that diet is related to certain chronic diseases. So we looked at these top five diet-related diseases: obesity, blood pressure, high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. And you see that individuals that don't actually have a chronic disease, they have healthcare costs that are 4 to 6 times lower than individuals that did have a chronic-related disease. The significant one here is stroke. You see that individuals that had a stroke had almost healthcare costs of $10,000 compared to if you didn't, it's about $1,500. The most expensive ones are stroke, heart disease, diabetes, and then you keep going down the limit. And again, these are also significant at the P, at the 0.01 value. Now, since we looked at those, the top cardiovascular, most expensive chronic diseases are going to be your cardiovascular disease. So this was your heart disease, your stroke, and your hypertension. Now, we do know that heart disease and cardiovascular disease are the most expensive diet-related chronic diseases in the country. They're also the number one killer. This is a very expensive disease. It has very debilitating side effects. So we know that in 2010, the direct medical costs of CVD were nearly $270 billion. And this accounts for 30% of Medicare expenditures and 12% of Medicaid expenditures. But I also like to point out that beyond the just healthcare costs, there are indirect costs as well. You're talking about lost productivity. You are more likely to be sick, so you can't go to work, so you have absenteeism. And there's also the notion of presenteeism. You do show up to work, but maybe you're not as efficient, or maybe you're not feeling so great, so you're not working as hard, or you need to take breaks very often. And also, we also know that cardiovascular disease is also disproportionately affects certain populations. African Americans have higher rates of this than whites or Latinos in this country. Now, what we wanted to do is we wanted to see These are scary numbers, and they're not getting better. If our cardiovascular disease rates stay the same and nothing changes, by 2030, we're expecting that 116 million Americans are going to experience CVD, and these treatment costs are supposed to be over $800 billion. Now, I tried to show a little bit earlier that, you know, fruits and vegetables are associated with decreased risk in diet-related chronic disease. Fruits and vegetables are wonderful. They have a protective factor for CBD. This is probably most likely that they're high in fiber and water and vitamins and minerals, and they're low in calories and low in calories. And this is the great idea that they make us stay fuller longer, so you're not less likely to be snacking later on. Now, unfortunately, most Americans don't actually eat the recommended amount of fruits and vegetables. This graph shows that in 2008, we were only eating about 0.8 cups of fruit a day and then 1.6 cups of vegetables per day. So this is only about 40% and 64% of the recommended levels of fruits and vegetables. So we wanted to try to figure out, you know, what would happen if we actually were eating more fruits and vegetables. We recognize that, one, cardiovascular disease, it's highly related to diet, but there are other factors that are in there. There's smoking habits, there's physical activity rates, there's alcohol consumption, there's age, there's your genetics. So it's really hard to isolate the very specific impacts of fruit and vegetable consumption. But there have been meta-analyses that do show that with each additional daily fruit and vegetable, this can reduce your risk of CVD, coronary heart disease, by 4% per serving, and then stroke by 5% by serving. And we wanted to take this and figure out what would happen if we applied this nationwide across every adult, and how many lives could be saved and how much medical expenditures could be reduced. That we're, you know, increasing one daily fruit and vegetable serving, and then also what if we were actually eating what we were supposed to be eating. Now, what we have here is that current projections, well, in 2011, there are about 600,000 deaths from heart disease and about 120,000 from stroke. And we did know that the CVD in the United States, coronary heart disease, and stroke, these account for about 32% of all CVD costs. Now, assuming the medical costs for these disorders are proportional to the rates of incidence, we estimate that if Americans increase their consumption to the federal dietary guidelines, we can actually save about $13 billion for a single serving increase, and about $54 billion if we actually increase to a full serving. Now, again, these are assuming that you had started eating fruits and vegetables now and this went out to 2030, we would think that this would have to be sustained over multiple years. But just kind of a bottom line for that, a one serving fruit and vegetable increase could lead to 30,000 prevented deaths, $13 billion savings in medical costs, and if we actually ate the full amount of fruits and vegetables that were recommended, this would be 127,000 lives prevented, deaths prevented, and then $54 billion in medical costs over the lifetime. So these are great for adults, but we also understand that children are very important because children grow older. We wanted to see, okay, what would happen if kids were actually eating more fruits and vegetables? Children are also a little bit delinquent in eating their fruits and veggies sometimes, so we wanted to focus in on them. And recently, the University of Arkansas examined the impact of the fresh fruit and vegetable program in 14 different elementary schools. Now, for those of you who may not know what the fresh fruit and vegetable program is, this is actually a federally assisted child nutrition program. This gives schools that have 50% of their kids on free or reduced price lunch, they give them free fruits and vegetables to give to kids for snacks. So these kids are not even eating this at lunch or breakfast. It is in between meals. So they're getting this extra dose of really good food. And the great thing is that these schools receive about $50 to $75 per student per year to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. They're not canned, they're not frozen, they're fresh. And this is an amazing cost savings, because what they found was when they looked at 14 schools, they tracked kids from kindergarten, second, and fourth grade. They followed them for 3 years out. And those schools that had the program actually saw school-wide obesity rates decrease at 3%. This is $50 to $75 per kid. Previous studies have estimated that if you need a 1% decrease in childhood obesity rates, you're going to pay $280 to $330 per student. So we thought, this is amazing. These results are very, very interesting. So what would happen now if we try to expand this to all children, all elementary school children in the U.S.? Now, we do know that out of the 24.7 million kids in the U.S. today, about 18% are obese. Now, Duke researchers have estimated that the lifetime medical cost of an obese child is actually $19,000. And if these rates stay the same, this child stays obese as they age into adulthood, healthcare costs over the lifetime of that child and our generation will reach about $83 billion. So this was kind of a back of the envelope calculation of, you know, how much would this program cost if we offered it to every single child in their entire elementary education. So we looked at approximately $50 per child. We've got 24.7 million elementary school age kids for 5 years. That's about $6 billion. Now, assuming these kids are going to experience the same impacts as this program, you would have obesity rates decrease from 18% to 15% nationwide. Now, this would mean that our medical costs would decrease from $83 billion for these obesity-related medical costs to $69 billion. So that is a $14 billion a year, or $14 billion savings for this generation. Now, again, these are estimates. In public health, it's very hard to isolate what one policy or program would do, and not being able to control for everything. But this is just an idea of what could we see, what could happen. So I think what we've kind of talked about so far already is that we know that current agricultural and farming policies incentivize certain crops. They incentivize the high production of these crops that get put into as the main ingredients in junk foods. Now, unfortunately, we know that these junk foods are nutrient deficient. That means they are high in sugar, fat, and salt, and they are low in fiber, and vitamins and minerals. And there's a direct link between poor diets and increased risks for certain chronic related diseases. And I think we saw a lot of numbers and commas and billions, and that's a very big number. So we do know that poor diets are really detrimental to our health, and they're expensive to treat. And more than that, it's the fact that you might lose a family member or a friend earlier on in life than you wouldn't have to. So what we want to show is that, or we want to look at more, is focusing on studies that show that increased fruit and vegetable intake could have promising results. These studies can only go so far. What we really need is to inform policy and inform conversations at people that can actually influence programs and policies at local, state, and federal levels. This is just a start of the conversation. And does anybody know of some debates going on right now? There might be a presidential election coming up. These are issues that I've paid attention to multiple debates, and I'm not hearing the word food. I think one thing that is very important is that food and health are not to be separated. They are one and the same. Food touches every aspect of our day. It touches, it affects poverty rates, it affects education levels, you're talking about your jobs, your economy, your health. So we're really trying to push candidates to talk and understand and say, you know, food is such a huge thing and it's a huge part of our society, so why can't we talk about making a better system? So the one thing that the Union of Concerned Scientists is doing is we are trying to get candidates to actually talk about this, to talk about the fact that we have food and farm policies that are really detrimental to our health, detrimental to our planet. So if you're interested, you can look at our Plate of the Union campaign, and I'm happy to talk about this a little bit later.